Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Witkoff-Kushner duo were back in Moscow. Is diplomacy again on the table? Why now? Is NATO on board? Is there anything that will save Ukraine from utter defeat? Also, Europe claims to be in the grip of Russian hybrid warfare. Are Europeans paranoid? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli, in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's just kick it off with Mark. We had Mr. Witkoff and Kushner in town. I'm not really sure I understand the timing. Does it have something to do with the Radcliffe visit, which is kind of still rather mysterious? Does it have to do everything with Iran? I don't understand the timing and what new ideas could be on the table. So that's like eight questions. Take any one you want.
Yeah. So we had yet another visit from the very best, the brightest minds of the U.S. diplomatic corps. Trump's sleazy real estate buddy from New York and his feckless son-in-law. Russians take them extremely seriously when they arrive, it must be said.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the timing to me is very obvious, right? And it has very much to do with the earlier visit by the director of the CIA, Radcliffe, last week, right? The first visit of a director of the CIA to Moscow since November 2021, just before Russia embarked on its intervention in the Ukrainian civil conflict, the special military operation. And I think that's the context that we need to keep it in, because that is the import, right? The director of the CIA doesn't come for tea, right? He almost certainly came, you know, with probably some token carrots. We could remove some sanctions sometime in the future. We could have great business deals in the future. You know, things that are absolutely sure to have the Russians breathless and you know, willing to end the SMO over the course of this. Sarcasm, of course, but with sticks, right? Because the CIA director comes with sticks. And what they want is they want Russia to stop in Ukraine, because the Kiev regime is on the ropes. All right. The Russian long-range strike blockade of Odessa and the rest of the Black Sea and Danube ports has paralyzed NATO military deliveries into the country. And it's leading directly to the absolute destruction of what is left of the Kiev regime's economy, because 80% of their exports, their grain, their metals, their sunflower oil, it all went through those ports. Now nothing gets in, nothing gets out, and Russia's destroying the ports. Similarly, Russia has begun a 24/7 drone and missile campaign against Kiev, as they promised a month ago, and barely an hour goes by without a hit. The air raid sirens are just constantly going off in Kiev, and they're destroying everything. The logistics in the country are leading to food shortages everywhere. They attack Russia's warehouses. All right, that happened. Wildberries, Russia attacks their warehouses, except they do it 10 times bigger, because tit is much bigger for tat.
And they're not just doing it for clickbait.
Okay? No, they're not doing it for clickbait. They're doing it for logistical reasons. So they're over a barrel, and the U.S. needs to save their proxy regime. Even if Trump doesn't like Zelensky, that doesn't matter, right? They need to save the regime. So first they try to stick a threat of escalation, attacks against Russian civilian airports and airliners, and then when that didn't budge the Russians, then the charm duo arrives.
Yeah, but let me go to Jordan. I mean, this is kind of like a day late and a buck short, isn't it? I mean, all of the sticks, well, one would have imagined they would have been used right now. And plus, I think we have to point out the obvious, that the diplomatic duo, if we can call them that, don't have really much of a record of diplomacy, George.
No, they don't have much of a diplomacy. And if one looks at the Kremlin readout, there really is nothing new. It's the standard. We were very happy to meet with them. They're really very good people. They came very well prepared with some very interesting ideas. However, we intend to continue with our operations. We're doing very well. We're making progress on every front. And we, oh, and by the way, we also told them about the Nazi nature of the regime, which has been particularly highlighted through the reburials of Andrei Melnik and others. So we wanted to emphasize this to them. And then, we talked about future Russian-American projects. So there was really nothing whatsoever that the Russians gave them. However, the Russians do what they always do very well, which is they're very polite, they're very diplomatic, express their compliments to President Trump, wish him well, and that's it. So it's very hard to see how anything at all develops. I also think that in the case of Ratcliffe, I agree with what Mark said. I think that essentially they wanted something. They wanted to get the Russians to stop with the attacks in the Black Sea. They wanted to stop the attacks on the energy infrastructure, and they want to dress it up with a peace plan.
I want a unicorn for Christmas also.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. But I think they also want some help on Iran. I think they also want some, hey, can you also please do us a favor, lean on Iran, apply some pressure on them, get them to knock it off.
I want two unicorns for Christmas.
And then we'll be really nice. We'll be friends in the future. But just help us out there and we'll help you out sometime in the future.
Mark, there's a second leg to this act here, because as far as I know, Kushner and Witkoff have never visited Kiev. That is the second leg of this. So what are they going to say to the Zelensky regime?
Well, it's obvious that the U.S. is trying to apply some kind of pressure to the Kiev regime, because once again, the Western set up and controlled anti-corruption watchdogs whose only purpose is to apply political pressure to the regime. It's turned on and off whenever they want some pressure. Naboo has been turned on again and has targeted more people. It's amazing. There's more than a dozen people within Zelensky's circle, within his regime, that have now been, tarred and fairly, everyone is corrupt and it was exposed and there's evidence. But Zelensky knew nothing. He knew nothing about any of these people. He knows nothing at all about anything, evidently. But this is obvious. It's been activated. You've got the Kiev regime's intelligence agencies fighting each other literally in the streets of Kiev again, because it happened in the beginning of the war again. So, there's a lot of turmoil. But,
let's pull on that thread a little bit here. I mean, this tells me that this is a regime that is very unstable. I mean, yeah. There's a claim that the Russians sent a missile into one of their offices. And my attitude is, when you have a circular firing squad, just watch, okay? Because that's what it looks like to me. This is this is self-destruction of the regime.
Yeah. As to the last, yes, the regime is definitely stressed and destabilized. And a lot of that is really due to Zelensky, right? Going after a lot of his own people out of insecurity, to secure his own power base and make sure that no challengers arrive from inside his own regime, because there's no possibility of them arriving from outside, because there's no politics. There's a regime. As to this, the drone flying into the supposed office of the new director of the SBU, the Kiev regime's intelligence agency, Poklad the Strangler, as he is known in Ukraine, with the mafia background. I actually, there's a lot of questions whether that was even Russia, and a lot of credible commentary from within the Ukrainian dissident Telegram channels is that this was actually part of the SBU GUR intelligence war. The cover is that it was a Russian attack, and the Russians haven't commented at all, which is also not like them for something like this. But you know, the regime is definitely I don't think it's about to collapse, right? It will only collapse when the U.S. and Europe stop support for it, right?
Okay, so let's go back to my original question here, George. What is Kushner and Witkoff going to say to Zelensky, given the background that Mark just gave us?
Well, I mean, well, what they should say is ultimately, yes, the jig is up. We have to work something out. Oh, and by the way, President Trump needs something. He's going into a very difficult midterm race. He's at a record low on popularity. He needs some kind of a win a few days before the midterms to tout his great success as a peacemaker. But it is the case that Zelensky, his strategy has failed, because the entirety of this strategy is predicated on being able to bring in the United States, NATO, to come in with this war. Otherwise, this war is not winnable. He cannot win this war. The only chance that Ukraine ever had was if NATO comes in and gets into a direct war with Russia. And then he's fine and he doesn't have to worry anymore. But because that is failing, despite all the big talk that's coming from Europe, despite all the big talk from American politicians, it's still same old, same old. They're not doing anything more for Ukraine than they were doing.
Okay, well, again, I'm trying to understand how this is all working. Mark, so it seems to me that the Kremlin openly, warmly accepted the duo because it was a way to stick it to the Europeans.
Partly. I think that Russia, always when they're going through the motions of diplomacy, and I think that's what it is. I don't think they expect or hope anything from it. But there's also, I think, a bigger eye towards the global South, towards China, towards India, but also BRICS partners in Brazil, that Russia is reasonable. And that they're willing to do diplomacy. And, you know, it's not their fault if the other side is not recognizing realities. I think keeping the rest of the global South online and thus keeping Russia's, economy humming is the priority when going through these diplomatic motions. For the Trump administration, they need a ceasefire. They need to save the proxy regime. And I think what I think is happening is they're going back to the kind of the pre-Anchorage discussions. They're trying to get the Kiev regime to give up the last few strongholds that they have in the Donbass. And they think that if they offer that to Russia, that Russia will accept that and agree to a ceasefire. I think that is gone, right? That's no longer a possibility. Russia will want a lot more than that now. But the Kiev regime is not even willing to do that because, you know, they fight to the last Ukrainian, that they are able to throw in front of the regime, you know, and will do so all the way to Kiev. So that's why I think the U.S. is applying pressure. But I also think it's moot because nothing that they could even conceivably pressure the Kiev regime into accepting will be acceptable to Russia at this point. And what would be acceptable to Russia is beyond the ability of the U.S., the Europeans, or the Kiev regime to agree to.
If anything was going to happen, it would have, and I'll end on this before we go to the break, it should have happened in the first 2 months of the second Trump administration, and that would have set the tone and tenor to end this conflict, and that was a missed opportunity. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. Remind you, we're talking about some real news, and that real news, George, is the word hybrid is really popular right now in Europe, okay? So what is hybrid, and why do the Europeans keep invoking it, and why are they so paranoid, George?
Well, I wish I knew what hybrid meant. It is their favorite word. We had a news conference last week given by the German Interior Minister Alexander Dobrindt, in which he declared that the German investigators have proven conclusively that it's highly likely that Russia was behind the Leipzig.
Well, how can it be conclusive and highly likely?
Well, exactly. It was remarkable how in no time at all they could establish this, whereas in the case of the Nord Stream attacks, it took them years and years and years before they came up with a story about the Ukrainian adventurers and the hot babe and the yachting trip.
And the miraculous passports.
Yeah. Exactly. And how they managed to carry so much explosives on a simple yacht. But this time they came up with this thing. And so Dobrindt kept saying, hybrid, hybrid, hybrid. This is all part of Russia's hybrid war. But he never really spelled out what it is. And so ultimately, we're still left with no idea what that is, except that we have to really get ready. We have to really mobilize against Russia. And how does this mobilization express itself? Well, the Germans have closed down the Russian Cultural Center in Berlin.
I'm sure that'll help the Ukrainians a lot.
Well, that's right. So apparently all of those people doing the poetry readings and setting up exhibitions of Russian artists, they were all engaged in some espionage on behalf of Russia, some subversion and disinformation and whatever. And of course, the Russians, as is their wont, they always act symmetrically. The Russians have responded by closing down the Goethe Institutes in Russia. But ultimately, they're still in this mode of threatening. They keep threatening that they're going to do something or other to Russia, but they haven't really gone beyond this kind of nonsense of closing down a consulate and closing down a cultural center. So you've got this, you know, this everyone in Europe goes in unison. We thoroughly condemn Russia's hybrid war. Let's get our hands on that 300 billion euros that we've been talking about now for 3 years.
This is the makings of a new season of Slow Horses. Okay. Anyway, Mark, are these false flags? You know, I want to make it very clear. And George and I in our podcast have gone through, correct me if I'm wrong, George, but we've done just every single one of them, okay? Yeah. And, you know, maybe Russia is behind it, but there's never been any conclusive evidence. There are no meaningful arrests. People suddenly, we've identified someone, but they left and they went across the border. I mean, I don't know what kind of intelligence agencies they have. But, I mean, what is this, false flags? Who's calling what bluff? And what does it all mean? Is it the Europeans keeping their people on razor edge? Is it the Russians pinpricking? I mean, how do you put it together? Because it's hybrid, so whatever the hell that means. Mark.
Okay, so there's something real here. There's something not real here. And there is actually a rationale and a reason behind the unreal part of it here. So first, there is a covert shadow war going on between Russia and the Kiev regime and NATO, and has been over the entire course of this war, right? There's regular assassinations in Russia. There was just another one this week. There's acts of sabotage on railroads and weapons depots and all of this sort of things. Whatever they can possibly do, they do all the time, right? The FSB stops dozens of these things a week. Now, Russia is almost certainly doing the same thing back, more right now, or at least to some extent directed in Europe, because Europe is now the logistical rear, right? Producing all of these drones, right? All these joint companies, right? That are actually, and they've long been doing it with artillery and military vehicles and everything. And there's all these accidents at these artillery facts and these drone things, right? I know it's a very dangerous business. And, you know, some of them might be genuine accidents, but...
Or a lot of clumsy people.
I think we can be candid and say that this is Russia's response. They don't need to respond to every provocation by bombing Estonia, you know, by direct kinetic strikes. They've got other means. And that's what they've been doing. However, they've been very good at not getting caught throughout the entirety of this war while doing it, which brings us to the unreal aspect of this. In Leipzig, a drone was just found laying on the tarmac, on the air. Just not an attack. It's presented as an attack. There's a drone laying on the tarmac right next to a Ukrainian military transport that was bringing supplies back to the country. I don't know how it got there. It must be the Russians, right? You know, this is the thing. And it's not a Russian drone. And even the statements from the Germans, it's not that it's a Russian drone. It's that the Russians are responsible, which is the same type of vague language that the Estonians used when Ukrainian drones flying over their territory on attack vectors to St. Petersburg or something. Well, yes, it's a Ukrainian drone, but ultimately Russia is responsible, right? That's their logic. So there is some false flags going on here. And I think the Kiev regime is doing multiple of them at this point. The attacks on German electrical substations, Russia doesn't have any real reason for that. Doesn't, you know, it's not like an attack on a bombing of a drone manufacturing center. I think these are obvious false flags, but they're also, Europe is going along with them because they provide cover, right? If Russia is attacking a German airport, right, by having a drone, maybe the drone's passport was laying out on the ground too, I don't know. Then that legitimizes Zelensky's announced attacks on Russian airports and civilian airliners that move through Russia's airspace. This is a clumsy attempt at narrative cover.
Exactly. And that's assuming that Kiev's policy should be mirrored by the Europeans, which is a very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah.
So, George, I mean, so, you know, the Europeans love to mock the so-called Russian red lines. Well, where's Europe's red lines in all of this? Are they just going to have to take it? I mean, I think that I'm agreeing with Mark here, and that this is an annoyance, and it's begging the Europeans. So, what are you going to do about it?
Yes, but it is at the same time quite minor, at least as far as the what they've said in public. I mean, maybe it's more severe than that, but at the moment, most of these attacks are failed attacks. I mean, when we have Polish Prime Minister Tusk rushing off, oh, look at this attack on a Polish rail line. And then we look, and where's the damage? I mean, we don't see any damage. And in fact, the train driver never even spotted any damage.
He didn't even notice it. He didn't even feel it.
Yeah. That's right. So while they keep saying, oh, Russia did this and Russia did that, and those would, if Russia was doing that, then it would be, these were legitimate targets. I mean, these are all factories producing arms, artillery for Ukraine. They are legitimate targets. But if Russia is doing it, then at least according to the stories that we're getting in the NATO press, then they're doing a very bad job, because that either, oh, this was another sabotage of attempt that was foiled. Oh, this was very minor. Then they're not doing a very good job. So it's the same way with this event in Leipzig. If Russia were behind this, then it's a very bad. The Germans are claiming three, no less than three, and maybe there are more drone attacks on Leipzig airport. Every single one of them failed. So, While they would be, I think, legitimate targets by Russia, they're doing a very bad job, which tends to suggest that these are false flag attacks. They're just part of an attempt to whip up an anti-Russian fervor.
But that's it.
We're
that's
under attack.
It.
We're under attack from Russia.
That's just it, Mark. Is that, you know, particularly the government of Chancellor Merz, coming out with the Leipzig incident and all this. This is right before, as well, we're speaking right now, elections in Germany. I'm sure they're connected.
Europe is afraid, Peter. There's a lot of rhetoric. There's a lot of bluff going on. There's a lot of maintaining an illusion of superiority for their population. And there's also, you know, not a very subtle attempt at militarization of their societies, of creating public sentiment for remilitarization of their countries and for hatred of Russia. And they're not getting the response from their publics in Germany, in the UK, in France, and elsewhere that they want. Poland, of course, is a different story, right? They've got, you know, historical beefs and so forth. But the Europeans on the other side of this rhetoric and this narrative construction, there was a NATO report out in the last week, again, leaked to the press, that shows that the Europeans, that NATO is saying that they cannot hope to stand in a conventional conflict with Russia.
Right. Without the Americans.
Without the Americans. Well, I think Iran should.
Well, he may. I don't know now.
Americans. Yeah. That's not going to help them much at this point. But they take a look at, they're tossing through the Kiev regime up to 1,000 drones at Moscow a night for the last month or two. And according to, you know, the Kiev regime's military, you know, analysts, one out of 1,500 gets through. One out of 1,500 of these drones. That air fortress Moscow scares them. And then they see what Russia is capable of doing to Kiev and to Odessa with their own long-range strikes. And they realize they don't have any air defense left because they gave it all to the Kiev regime and it didn't do them any good anyway. They're scared. So they're flailing about. They're trying to get increased military spending. These political regimes that have survived the last few years, with these pro-Kiev, anti-Russian platforms are failing going into the polls, and they're terrified that, the countries are becoming destabilized. I don't know how likely it actually is that Marine Le Pen will manage to take power in France or that the AfD will in Germany. But at any rate, it has them terrified of the upswelling against this, all of these policies that are now playing out.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're moving into another era of this conflict is who lost Ukraine? And there's plenty of people to blame, except for no one will blame themselves or be
Trump. They'll blame Trump.
Okay. All right. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.